Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We bring in now Lance Taylor at the Lance Taylor, 94.5 Jocks in Birmingham. What's the play for the Final Four? What are you planning tomorrow?
I've got mine locked in. I've got a dog and I've got a favorite. You want to take a guess?
I bet you are on, that's good. I bet you're on Virginia and I bet you're on Texas Tech.
You've got me. I think that's going to be our national championship matchup, and I think it probably plays in the 50s.
So we talked about this the other day. Who do you think has more at stake from a coaching perspective in this Final Four? Obviously, Bruce Pearl's never been there before. Neither has Tony Bennett. Neither has Chris Beard. Tom Izzo, on the other hand, has already won a national championship. But getting to a second national championship would be huge for him. Not the program, but the coach. Who has the most at stake?
I think it's Tom Izzo. I think you hit it right there because the guy's been to 8 Final Fours. And when you really break down the career, Clay, he takes over the program in 1995. It reminds me of what Bob Stoops did at Oklahoma. We appreciate and respect him as one of the top 2, 3, 4 coaches in the game. But the bottom line is he's got one national championship, and it happened early on. And to just sit there and think about it, it's been 19 years since Tom Izzo won a national championship with all the success he's had. There is such a difference. And look, I really believe winning a national championship in college basketball is probably the hardest championship to achieve. But there is a huge difference between 1 and 2. And to put him in elite company with guys that have multiple national championships, I think it's rarefied air. Now, you look at the other guys, and we tried to rank the coaches, and obviously 1 through 4 in this Final Four, it's easy to go Tom Izzo 1 just based on credentials. Then it gets really difficult because Bruce Pearl, you know, he's had success everywhere he's been. Tony Bennett took Washington State to the Sweet 16, and he's obviously an elite coach. He finally gets monkey off back, getting to a Final Four. Chris Beard's the big incomplete. Ultimately, Chris Beard might be the best of all of them. I love this Chris Beard. The more you read about him and the more you hear him in post and pregame, he blows you away. So ultimately, who knows who this will be the most important to, but I think right now it's got to be Izzo trying to get that second national championship.
You do radio in Birmingham, big station down there, 94.5 Jocks in Birmingham, in that city. And obviously football with Auburn and Alabama and the SEC in general is the lifeblood of that city. How would you compare Auburn's Final Four run to a exciting college football run for either Auburn or Alabama? Where does it rank in terms of what the city has been like and in terms of what reaction you've seen?
It's crazy buzz, Clay. And, you know, one of the reasons we've got 3 relevant basketball programs, at least over the last 30, 40 years, there's been some relevant programs in Alabama, Auburn, and UAB. And the one thing all 3 have in common is they've never been to a Final Four. And so Auburn is done something. They're in uncharted territory now that nobody else has been able to do. So, you know, Auburn fans are taking a lot of pride in that. And, you know, I went to pick up the kids from school yesterday, and it's almost like a Friday in the fall where you see kids unloading and getting into buses, and they've all got their Auburn gear on. And we were out shopping last night, and people are wearing their Auburn gear at the mall. So people are – it's almost like an Iron Bowl weekend where you've got Alabama taking on Auburn. I mean, everybody is flying the flag this weekend, and there's a ton of buzz. There's a lot of Auburn fans that are making plans to go up to Minneapolis this weekend. And, you know, it logistically it's something, you know, they weren't prepared for because I don't think they thought they would get out of the second weekend. I think most Auburn fans believed that they would beat Kansas, but once they got to that Friday night game last week against North Carolina, they didn't think they were going to win that game. And then once Okiki went down, they really didn't believe they were going to beat Kentucky. But now that they're here, you know, anything's possible.
Are Alabama fans rooting feverishly for Auburn to lose in basketball too, or is it a different feel than if Auburn were in the playoff in college football?
I think it's a little different, but I think the majority of diehard Alabama fans hate Auburn in anything. And, you know, I watched the Kentucky-Auburn game this past Sunday. There was a group of 8 of us, and 2 were diehard Alabama fans. And, I mean, they were sick to their stomach saying, I can't believe we've got to wait another week of hearing this. And if Auburn won a national championship, we don't know what we would do. So I think there's a lot of that. And I think you've got some that like to fly the flag for the entire state, and they think it's kind of a cool thing. But now I think that you're at this point, I think the majority, probably 95% of Alabama fans, would probably pull against Auburn at this point.
We're talking to Lance Taylor at 94.5 Jocks in Birmingham, at the Lance Taylor on Twitter. All right, LT, Auburn has proven that they will insanely overpay when you look at Gus Malzahn, right? And I know Arkansas made a run at him, but I think even most Auburn people would be like, the fact this dude is making over $7 million a year or whatever exactly he's making is wild. What is Bruce Pearl going to make after this Final Four run?
You look at Pearl right now, Clay, and he is 38 in total compensation when it comes to college basketball.
Which is really nowhere near the top, right? 38th overall is pretty wild.
But I'll say this. It's still $2.6 million, and this was a terrible basketball program. You know that before he took this over. So he's still making a lot of money for Auburn. But I agree with you. Malzahn broke the bank, and he hadn't even won a championship in the SEC when he got that extension. Now, he had won one in 13 when obviously he went on and played for a national championship in year one against Florida State. But when he was in the middle of that contract negotiation, they were about to play Georgia for the SEC championship, and they ultimately lost that game, and he got that huge contract extension that I don't think a lot of Auburn fans were happy about. And when you start to break this down, we did an exercise the other day, and a lot of your listeners probably don't care, but I know you really follow the SEC, and when you start to look at the 14 coaches on both football and basketball, and you see which university has a better basketball coach than football, we went 9-5 basketball.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not even close, Bruce Pearl over Gus Malzahn. With all that said, 38th right now in total compensation. We had Rick Barnes on the show yesterday. I know you're not a huge fan, and they vastly underachieved once they got to the tournament again this year. He's 14th in compensation, making $3.2 million. Bruce Pearl beat him twice in a week's time. You know, if I'm representing Bruce Pearl, you're paying me more than Rick Barnes. And I think it's going to be creeping up on top 10 money if you want to keep Bruce Pearl. And I think there's a sense of loyalty from Bruce Pearl to Auburn based on the fact that they gave him his second chance. So I think they'll pay him over $3 million, and they could pay him close to $4 million, putting him right there in the top 10 of college basketball coaches.
How weird did you think it was that UCLA thought they were going to hire John Calipari away by offering him less money than he was making at Kentucky?
Yeah, it was one of the dumbest offers I've ever seen. And I'm one of those that continues to believe that UCLA can still be a really, really good job. And the more you read about it, their athletic department just doesn't seem to want to get behind anything. But to pay him less money to do a more difficult job in a market that's probably 50% at least more expensive than his current market in Lexington was one of the dumbest offers I've ever seen out there.
Oh, I think it's almost triple as expensive as Lexington. I mean, Lexington is an awesome town. If you've ever spent any time, people out there listening, if you like horse racing, if you want to go see a Kentucky basketball game sometime, and Lexington is a beautiful, awesome college town. But John Calipari making $9 million there is like making $25 million in L.A.
Well, look, Ben Howland took UCLA to three consecutive Final Fours. Calipari, his ability to recruit, it wouldn't change. It doesn't matter where he goes.
Right.
Calipari could go to, again, I'm going to reference Washington State, and he would be able to get athletes there. And if you gave him the UCLA job and you let him have total control, he would dominate. So if you're UCLA, what's it worth to you? What's it worth to you to be a borderline bubble team every year or to be one of the top three, four, five teams in college basketball? I mean, to me, that's worth $12 million a year.
It is interesting that I don't remember anybody ever offering less money and getting a coach to leave who wasn't in danger of being fired. You mentioned the SEC basketball resurgence. I have argued that Greg Sankey deserves a lot of credit for that in the SEC because it's been, as the commissioner, has been one of his focal points, but also because the SEC network money has just become so substantial. You see Buzz Williams jump from Virginia Tech to Texas A&M. What would you attribute the SEC's basketball resurgence to?
You know, I think Greg does have a lot to do with that. I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with money, too. I think these programs realize, and this is what baffles me about the Pac-12, and I know they're not printing money like the SEC right now, but success, you know, that does equate to, you know, bringing in a lot of revenue. And I think the SEC sees that, you know, if you're winning championships and you've got relevant programs, you're going to be able to make money. So they're making money on the football side. Why not turn that and, you know, put the investment into some of these coaches? And, again, I don't understand, you know, back to the whole Calipari thing. If I'm Larry Scott, the Pac-12, I'm pitching in. to UCLA. I got to make the conference relevant again. But the SEC, we saw how bad the basketball was. You know, 3-4 years ago, they were just battling to get two or three teams into the NCAA tournament. And now the conference is completely loaded. And you can make an argument right there with the ACC and the Big Ten. It's one of the best basketball conferences in college basketball.
Last night, the Warriors come out and get up like 31-8 or something on the Lakers. The Lakers have set down LeBron James. They don't care. They're playing out the thread here. But the flip side is the Warriors seem like they have finally said, hey, we're ready for the postseason. They are starting to dominate down the stretch. Is there any hope of anybody beating the Warriors in your mind? Would you take Warriors or the field right now for the NBA playoffs?
I'm still going to take the Warriors. I mean, it just seems like the most inevitable thing in sports outside of the Patriots winning the AFC East is the Warriors right now, at least the next couple of years, winning a championship. And, you know, I don't know what Durant's future is. Most people think he is gone. But right now, with a healthy Durant, a healthy Steph, everybody buying in, they've won 7 of the last 10. They've won 3 straight. They're 2 games up on the Nuggets right now. And, you know, I think it is kind of a fascinating 1-8, whether they play the Spurs or Oklahoma City with Russell Westbrook. But right now, you know, I'm still surprised the Rockets were able to take them 7 games last year in the Western Conference Finals. I'm taking Golden State. I usually take the field play, but I would take Golden State here.
All right, last question for you. It's a quick one. The NBA playoffs start on April 13th. Game of Thrones, the final season, begins on April 14th. You can only watch Game of Thrones, the first 6, the final 6 episodes, or the first round of the NBA playoffs. Which are you picking?
I'm a Lakers fan. 6 consecutive years of not getting to the postseason, not even close. I'm taking Game of Thrones.
I'm taking Game of Thrones, too.
Yeah,
good stuff, as always.
If most people are being honest with you, because first round of the playoffs, so irrelevant.
It's so predictable, too, in the NBA. It's not like the Warriors are going to come out and lose to the 8 seed. If you told me that could happen, then that would be crazy.
Yeah, and I saw odds on first character to go down in Game of Thrones last night. So, you know, and who knows? I mean, everybody's expendable when it comes to Game of Thrones. That, you talk about something that is not predictable.
I'll tell you this. Cousin Sal told me yesterday, he said one of his buddies had seen the first episode of Game of Thrones already. I don't know what the Hollywood connection is to make that happen. And he said that that it was really pretty outstanding, not surprisingly. But I am giddy to watch that on April 14th.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Clay, I'm going to be really – my expectations are extremely high for these 6 episodes. I mean, to me, every episode should be, you know, Mountain versus Viper, Red Wedding. I mean, I want crazy – I mean, this is it. I mean, this is the greatest show in television history to a lot of people, and you've got 6 chances to do it right. I mean, I don't want one B episode. I want all A+.
Yeah, here's the other thing on that as we come down the stretch. I mean, how amazing, theoretically, could that Sunday be? Because you've got, like I said, the NBA playoffs are going on, whatever, but some people will be interested in watching that on that Sunday. More importantly, you got Masters Sunday, which looks like it could be a pretty incredible run given all the golfers that are rounding into shape right now. So you could watch Masters Sunday, take a little bit of break for dinner, boom, Game of Thrones. That's a hell of a Sunday.
Yeah, and I think a lot of wives and girlfriends are going to get neglected. They need to just be prepared for that.
I think you're exactly, well, as if they aren't already. Good stuff as always, LT. We'll talk to you next week.
Enjoy the weekend. See you later.
We'll do. That's Lance Taylor at the Lance Taylor. I don't know how aggressive you guys are. We'll probably talk about this again next week, but I want to poll the crew here quickly in studio. Would you guys rather watch the first round of the NBA playoffs or Game of Thrones? I would go Game of Thrones. I know, Dub, you watch Game of Thrones. Which would you choose?
That is such a tough question. I'm going to have to go with Game of Thrones.
Danny G, which way would you go?
I also watch Game of Thrones, but I'm an NBA fan as well. This is tough. If it was the second round of the NBA, I might go NBA, but I'm also going to go GOT.
Who else watches Game of Thrones? Eddie or Roberto? I'm not sure.
You guys remember, Eddie's going to order the box sets.
Oh, yeah. Eddie, like, well, I don't know what Eddie's doing with his life that he hasn't watched Game of Thrones yet. Roberto, do you watch?
NBA season is over for me, so, yeah, Game of Thrones all the way.
Yeah, that is going to be – I think it's an interesting question. I know we have a ton of sports fans listening all over the country. But I think if you watch Game of Thrones, and I know some of you don't, you hate it, whatever. By the way, we'll be doing Game of Thrones reactions on this show every Monday in hour 2 for the 6 weeks that show is going on. So you can pencil that in. Make sure you download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll do a we'll treat it like a sporting event every Monday in hour two. Starting next weekend, we will do Game of Thrones analysis live on the show. So, Eddie, what are you doing with your life that you haven't watched Game of Thrones yet?
I don't have HBO. I know that's not a great excuse, but I want to start watching it. Once it's all over, I'm gonna just
binge watch. Pay $9, right?
For should one we start a go- or I could get Clay's HBO Go password.
Yeah,
or no, we can start a GoFundMe page.
Oh.
For Eddie,
not going to
show. No. The HBO, HBO Now, you can buy monthly, so you could literally pay $9. I don't know what a movie costs in LA now, but I know more I was going on to try to get Avengers Endgame.
I have it's HBO now. It's not $9. It's $14.99.
Okay, whatever. $14. Like the point here. The point here is you can.
Well, you've been
HBO.
In your castle, Clay. The cost of living has gone up for the rest of all of us.
The HBO Now. $14.99, and there are that's 10 cents an episode for Game of Thrones. For 1 month, you could binge Game of Thrones, and you could finish it by having the ability to watch the final six episodes. Right? I don't know what movies cost right now, but I went on to try to get Avengers Endgame tickets for my kids and for us to be able to go see it. And it's $100 to go see Avengers Endgame now in theater. So even a normal movie theater ticket is $15 or $20 now. So you could get all of Game of Thrones for less than you pay to go watch 1 2-hour movie.
All right, you've shamed me enough.
Right? I mean, that by the way, is I think one of the things that's going to be a challenge as we move into this streaming era. I think there are a lot of people out there. You mentioned password sharing, and certainly that goes on. But if you decide that you really want to watch a show, I think there are a lot of people who will sign up for HBO Now for 1 month, right? For the 1 month, maybe 2 months if they need to, the way it bridges around for a 6-week run. And so they'll pay $30, watch all of Game of Thrones, and then bail on HBO. I think there will be millions of people who will do that just to ensure they're able to watch the final six episodes of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, everybody at HBO is going to get bonuses. I mean, the spike that they'll get, you're right. Just I would pay that if I didn't have HBO.
Really, in all honesty. I mean, they bridged it, so you'd have to pay it for April and April and May both, I believe. But if you think about it, $30, I mean, you're basically paying $5 per Game of Thrones episode. That seems like a steal to me when you look at what things cost nowadays in the modern media environment. And I think there'll be a lot of people out there who do it. In the meantime, Eddie, who is wasting his life because he hasn't watched Game of Thrones yet, what are the updates from last night's sports?
Well, on the Geico scoreboard, we had three games in the NBA. Two of them were relevant. One of them wasn't. The Bucks beat the 76ers 128-122. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 45 points in the win for Milwaukee. They're now 59-20 on the year, and they have clinched the number one seed and home court advantage throughout the Eastern Conference and the NBA playoffs. Warriors over the Lakers, 108-90. Golden State leading Denver now by two games, the best record and the number one seed in the Western Conference. NHL, we had three teams clinching playoff spots. Penguins are in after beating the Red Wings 4-1. Hurricanes are in after downing the Devils 3-1, and the Avalanche are in after getting by the Jets 3-2 in overtime. In baseball, we had the Indians beating the Blue Jays 4-1. Now, Cleveland starting pitcher Trevor Bauer was pulled after seven innings with a no-hitter. He threw 117 pitches. Toronto was able to get a leadoff single in the ninth to break up the no-no. It was the Braves over the Cubs 9-4. Chicago's dropped 5 in a row. They're 1-5 now in the season, and the Red Sox, defending champs, are 2-6 after losing to the A's 7-3. Online car shopping can be confusing, but not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car. So visit True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. We'll be back to Outkick the Coverage in 10 seconds, but first, a word from Farmers.
At Farmers Insurance, we know a roof can withstand a lot. One exception being an airborne car. Seen it, covered it. Talk to Farmers.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Now back to Clay Travis and the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios.
Now, Eddie, you are our resident hockey expert. And I actually watched hockey last night. There's only a couple of games left because the Central Division, here I am showing off my expertise in the Western Conference, is a hell of a race, right? You got the Blues, you got the Preds, and you got the Winnipeg Jets, all three fighting it out down the stretch. This is a pretty exciting playoff race, right?
It is, and it's also very important because the second and third place teams in the Central have to play each other in the first round. So you want to win the division so you can play a wild card team and not have to face one of those other teams in your division. So whoever loses out on winning the division, that's going to be a hell of a first round matchup.
And the Preds right now, my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong, based on what happened last night, if they win on Saturday, they will be the number two overall seed in the Western Conference, and you set up, like you said, that incredible first-round playoff matchup between the St. Louis Blues and the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, that's accurate. So they would be the second seed, but the first team in their division. So they would face a wild card team. That means, yeah, Winnipeg and St. Louis would play. That would be a great series.
Yeah, this is going to be pretty interesting. If you're not in on the NBA playoffs, which I think a lot of people will not be, it's worth kind of paying attention to the NHL playoffs because they're everything the NBA playoffs aren't, in that you have no idea what's going to happen from one series to the next. And anybody can get on a run and potentially end up competing for the Stanley Cup. So that season is almost over. I think, am I correct that it ends on Saturday for everybody?
That is correct. And the playoffs, I believe, start on Tuesday.
So they will get going underway even faster than the NBA playoffs, which is going to be intriguing to see. All right, when we come back, there is right now a massive billboard up on the intersection. If you're in LA right now, early in the morning, late at night, however you want to classify it, I, along with my radio show, my television show co-host, have a billboard up at the intersection of Pico and Motor on the Fox Sports lot. Have you guys seen the billboard?
Yeah, I saw you guys putting it up on the screen during Lock It In on FS1 yesterday.
All right, so this is a really awesome deal. But I want to get the crew's verdict on something because the last time, I'm a little bit nervous because the last time I got a billboard that I was a part of was when we did the Fox College Football Saturday show when they launched FS1. I'm going to tell you why this is very ominous that we have the billboard now. I'm terrified now. I'll tell you why. That'll finish off hour one.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Danny G was trying to say hello to New Orleans with Juvenile, but I'm not sure if we're actually on 1280 a.m. in New Orleans yet. So if you're listening to us on 1280 a.m. in New Orleans, hello. This is Outkick the Coverage.
I saw the press release, but I didn't see our start date, but I know we're going to be on all 3 hours. So.
Yeah, right. I know we're going to be, but I'm saying you're saying hi to New Orleans, and we might not be on in New Orleans yet.
Well, maybe New Orleans is listening on the podcast right now.
Or the streaming on iHeart or anywhere else. But if you're actually listening on 1280 a.m. in New Orleans, let us know. Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Discover alerts you if they find your Social Security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. It's free for card members. Just sign up online at discover.com/free alerts. Limitations apply. And we're brought to you by Mako. You might not be able to get a new car with your tax refund, but you can make your car feel like it's brand new. All it needs is a great paint job. Come in to Mako today and get your dream paint job during their tax season sales event. So if you are driving in LA early this morning, or if you will be driving later in the day, at the intersection of Pico and Motor is the main Fox studio lot. And on the outside of the Fox studio lot there along Pico, they put big billboards up of the most recent successful shows that are airing on Fox. It can be, Fox, it can be Empire, for instance. It can be, I don't even know all the shows, you know, The Masked Singer. It can be the WWE, which is coming in October. Whatever shows they're trying to promote, they put up billboards. Have you guys seen this? The LA crew, have you been by the Fox lot before and noticed that they have these huge billboards up on the side of the building as you drive by?
No.
Okay. I used to work at the Fox lot, so yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Eddie used to work on that lot. I've seen it. I've driven past it several times, and also in Burbank at the TV studios, it's a common thing out here outside of all the studios.
Yeah, right. So they have a billboard. Thanks for the help, Roberto. They have a billboard.
You're fired, Roberto.
Right, yeah. All you had to do was say yes. You could have just lied and been like, yeah, you know, I've driven past.
Oh, yes, I've seen it. It's great.
Iconic West LA locations, the Fox studio, and have noticed at some point in my life that they put billboards outside of the building. That's all you had to say was yes, but thank you for saying no. So we have a huge billboard up. And so Petros Papadakis comes on this show with us every single Tuesday, right, in hour three. regular listeners of the show, AM 570 LA Sports out there, which is our LA affiliate. And so when they did this before, it was almost 6 years ago, I guess now. I think so. I think FS1 launched almost 6 years ago, which is crazy because I'm getting old. I can't believe it's been 6 years. And the only other time I've ever been on a billboard, I was on a Saturday morning college football show with Petros, Mike Pereira, Aaron Andrews, Joel Klatt, and Eddie George. And we were all on a billboard together. And I missed the day when everybody came to get their photos taken. And so this is crazy. I drive in, I pull in at the lot, and everybody's excited because the billboard's up. And I'm like, man, that's awesome. The billboard is up. But that doesn't look like me. Not that I'm an expert on like getting photographs taken, but I sit and I look at the billboard for a minute as I'm coming in and I'm like, man, you know what? That doesn't really look like me. And I look at it for longer and longer. And then I'm like, you know what? I don't think I have that tie. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I don't think that's my suit. And then I look longer and I'm like, wait a minute. My arms are crossed and I've got a wristwatch on and I don't wear a wristwatch either. So I'm sitting there looking at it, and then I'm like, and my face looks really weird. Like, why does my face look so weird on this billboard? Like, it looks all strangled out and, like, kind of bloated. And I'm like, I'm not an expert on it. Again, I'm not a model. But I'm like, this is a weird-looking photo. And then I'm talking about it. I go in, and I'm like, hey, you know, the billboard's great, but I look weird. And then Petros and a couple other people come out, and we look at the billboard, and Petros says, oh, my God, that's my body. They have used my body and put your face on it. And so I swear to God, the last time I was on a billboard advertising a show, they like spray-painted my face on Petros' body.
You actually had muscles.
No, Petros does not have muscles.
Oh, girth.
Girth, the wrong word to use there, too. It's a family program. So they spray painted my face, like photoshopped, whatever you want to call it. Face, it was like face transplanted me onto Petros's body. And so we were saying, and so I know that some of you have Petros Papadakis's phone number for the Textoso line, so you can text him. It'll know exactly what you're talking about. We said, I'm Franken Petros. Like, they have taken my face and put it on Petros's body, and it was such a bad Photoshop job. I don't even know what you would call that I didn't even want to point out the fact that I got to be on a billboard. And so within a couple of months, the show got canceled. So
it's like
that
dark
show
cloud.
Only lasted 1 year, and I didn't even have the benefit of being able to say, well, at least I was on a billboard. And by the way, Petros was on that show too, if I left him out. That's how I got to know Petros. So it was me, Petros, Mike Pereira, Eddie George, Aaron Andrews, and Joel Klatt. Really good group. That's how I got to know all that group of people really well. And the show got canceled. So now, if you go on my Twitter feed, we have got a pretty awesome billboard up, and it's actually me. I was there for the photo shoot, and it's not Petros' body and somebody else's body in my face. But now I'm a little bit nervous the show's going to get canceled. Now, we've already been picked up for year two, but that doesn't really mean anything. Because, you know, like, I've been on such a gambling collapse. Last night I win all three NBA games, but I lost the NIT final because I had to bet the NIT final. And I bet and lost a lot of money on the – ask me why am I betting the Wizards-Bulls game to begin with. But what do you think? Good sign, bad sign, given the omen here that the billboard is up?
Well, I normally would go dark and say you have a cloud hanging over your head that's going to storm on you. But Rachel Bonetta wasn't on that program, the one that got canceled. She carries all of you guys.
She does. She's going to leave. That's my big fear. My big fear is that Bonetta's going to get like a movie or TV job, another TV job, like a real TV job, not like a TV job where you play yourself, but like an actress TV job. And then she's just going to bail on us. And then we're going to be like, oh, my God, we got to go find a new host. And that's going to be a real challenge.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We are joined now by a guy who wrote a fantastic piece. I mean, really, really well done. I retweeted it late last night. You can go find it on my Twitter feed at Clay Travis. You can go find it on his Twitter feed at Ty Dunn. He is Tyler Dunn, and he wrote an incredible piece inside dysfunction with the Green Bay Packers, particularly as it surrounds Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy, although former GM Ted Thompson also involved. Want to bring in Tyler now. Tyler, first of all, incredible work on this piece. It's a long read. It's a great read. How long did it take to put all this together in terms of man hours and in terms of weeks, months? I mean, this thing doesn't happen overnight.
Well, hey, first of all, Clay, really appreciate you having me on. Enjoy the show, and thanks for that intro. You know, I probably around the same time, a lot of Packer fans out in Wisconsin were wondering, you know, what the hell's going on with this team when they lost to the Cardinals and Mike McCarthy was fired. I mean, the scene there at Lambeau Field is a little different than the scene that we all saw when they were winning the Super Bowl, when they're going 15-1, when things were just so automatic. And I should backtrack. I covered the team for four seasons for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So to be around the Packers at their height when things are clicking, as Ryan Grant said, they're literally going to meetings and they're chuckling inside because they know that they don't even need to have these meetings because they're just going to kill whoever they play on offense. But to get from point A to point B, I guess that's where it started, just the question of what happened. I mean, how did it get to this point? And I just started calling people, you know, a lot of players, scouts, coaches, anybody I could that's in the building, around the coach, around the quarterback, and just kind of did that. You know, there's obviously a lot of players who didn't want to talk, that wish they could talk. It's kind of funny. Yesterday when this kind of all broke, I heard from a couple of those players, and they're almost like thanking for some of this coming to light, things they wish they could have said for a while. But eventually kind of pieced together, and you know, like you said, there's a lot of different people to blame here. I mean, let's not forget Ted Thompson, the GM who built this team. The game passed him by. And he let this team kind of go soft, let a lot of leaders walk out that building, the glue that held the team together. But it kept coming back to Aaron Rodgers, to Mike McCarthy, to the two people who outlasted everybody.
So how much, and what I love about the piece is, it's sometimes there are pieces written and it is, this person is the villain, this person is why everything has mm-hmm. gone awry. Your piece really puts a lot of details out there, but doesn't claim, hey, Mike McCarthy is the reason, doesn't claim, hey, Aaron Rodgers is the reason, talks about their relationship in general and both of them being to blame for the decline of the Packer franchise. Mike McCarthy is gone. What are the chances in your mind that Aaron Rodgers gets along well with his new coach, Matt LaFleur?
Whew. That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it?
Yes.
If you were to ask, you know, Greg Jennings, you know, he was trying to wrap his mind around that very question throughout our conversation, and basically said, look, I can basically guarantee that he's going to make life really, really hard on a young Matt LaFleur. And he's basing that off of what he knows about Aaron Rodgers, his own relationship with Aaron Rodgers, how he saw Rodgers relate and work or not work with coaches, with teammates, not being willing to swallow his pride at certain points. He's very skeptical. I think that JerMichael Finley's very skeptical, and he pointed to the contract that Aaron Rodgers signed, that kind of gave him more leverage than ever, and that he had this sense of entitlement early on. And when he got that contract, it was like, you know, Mike McCarthy didn't stand a chance. Is a 39-year-old first-year head coach going to stand a chance? I don't know. I think that if Aaron Rodgers is open to playing within an offense, then and Ryan Grant thinks he will be. He thinks he's going to be revitalized, rejuvenated by something new. Like he called it white noise with Mike McCarthy. He gets to that point, you tune something out. But if he is open to playing within an offense and not constantly changing plays at the line of scrimmage, not constantly patting the ball, waiting for something downfield to develop, if he wants to develop and extend his career and win another Super Bowl, if he realizes he has to maybe just embrace an offense that could be innovative, that could take him to a new level, sure, I just don't know. I mean, I don't know how to answer that. I'd say there's a 50-50 shot.
What is amazing?
And let's not forget too, Clay. I mean, a lot of the talent is gone. I mean, yeah. A lot of the talent he had is gone.
So I don't know Aaron Rodgers. But I do know his two brothers well, pretty well. I mean, they are here, have spent a lot of time in Nashville, and so I know both of those guys well. I know and have worked with Greg Jennings, who everybody loves on the Fox lot. So when I read, and you didn't quote the Roger brothers, I don't believe, but they've certainly been outspoken about the fact that Aaron has cut off all of his family relationships, including his mom and dad. And also Greg Jennings, who is a really easygoing guy, says in the course of that article that Aaron cut him off when he saw him talking basically to Brett Favre before a game, and that he's tried to reach out to Aaron Rodgers. They obviously had a lot of success together in Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers just won't talk to him. That doesn't seem like normal behavior. It seems really strange that you would cut off your entire family and the receiver, really, that you probably have had the most success with other than Jordy Nelson, that you would cut him off too. It seems like Aaron Rodgers is living in a very black and white world, by which I mean he considers you to either be all in with him or all out with him, and that seems very strange. And you come in and again to the psychology of Aaron Rodgers and the way that he's built, and that's one of the things I think is so fascinating about this piece. Aaron Rodgers is not a quote-unquote normal guy. He still holds, you say in the article, he was still bitter about Mike McCarthy not drafting him all the way back when he chose. Mike McCarthy did to go with Alex Smith. He was the offensive coordinator, I believe, at the time with the San Francisco 49ers. Who knows if it was Mike McCarthy's choice at that point in time. But for people who didn't read the piece, take us into Aaron Rodgers' mental makeup and what the people you talked to said about him in the locker room and him in general in terms of his personality.
That was a great rundown right there, too. I think that there's two ways to really look at this. So everybody I talked to mostly agrees, yes, he's got this massive chip on the shoulder. You always hear about the chip on the shoulder with greats, but it's different for him. It's bigger. It's been there for a long time. The zero D1 offers, the waiting 4.5 hours in the green room, the fans booing him on family night when Brett Favre's trying to take his job back. He holds on to this stuff. He can hold a grudge unlike anybody I've ever encountered, I think most people have ever encountered, and that's what makes him great. And Ryan Grant pointed that out. Like, look, this is what makes him special. You can't have it both ways. That the fact that he maybe has a vindictive edge that he wants to stick it to people. And it's not just Mike McCarthy that ticked him off in that way in the green room. It was every single team, every single coach, every single GM that did. Just so happens that the one who took Alex Smith number one was an offensive coordinator with the 49ers. So, yeah, that's going to, you know, the relationship started with that lack of respect. And over time, that grew and grew and grew. And the chip became Mike McCarthy. You know, the grudge that drove him became his own coach. So then that's where it becomes, it can poison a situation, a relationship, a team, an individual. And people close to Aaron Rodgers, whether they're teammates, whether they're friends, people who are in or out of the circle, they say, look, that's not healthy. You know, maybe that's not normal behavior. That's not a good way to live your life. I don't know. It's almost like what makes them great comes with these extremely inconvenient side effects that can affect and damage a person's psyche. Only Aaron Rodgers knows what Aaron Rodgers is really thinking, but there definitely are some people in the building that wonder if he needs to kind of, you know, reboot mentally or something with this change, because it got to a point where, hey, his head coach left town and a lot of his friends, a lot of the teammates he was close with on that team are gone. He's the oldest guy. He doesn't really embrace that leadership role. And they don't know what's next for him.
Here's a detail that I think will make a lot of people out there just kind of shake their heads and kind of gets into his psyche. I was told, Tyler, that when he started to distance himself from his parents and his family members, that they sent Christmas presents to him. The mom and dad did. And you may have heard this detail. You may not have. I'm very confident based on where I heard it. The family sent Christmas presents to Aaron Rodgers because he wasn't hanging out with them. It's during the season, everything else. Aaron Rodgers had all of his mom and dad's Christmas presents that they sent to him sent back unopened.
Yep, that's 100% accurate.
That is a detail that I think, regardless of whether you're talking about football, you don't have to talk about sports at all. When you hear that somebody's mom and dad sent them Christmas presents and that person then sent all of those Christmas presents back unopened, that's something that really goes to a psychologically wild place, I think. Because I think most people out there, I mean, if that happened with your aunt or your uncle, if that happened with your grandma or grandpa or anywhere else, you would say, man, that is a sign of some really substantial issues going on in your personal life to make a decision like that. And so, you know, Aaron is 35 now. I don't know who he's dating. I know he doesn't have any kids. I mean, he doesn't really seem to have anybody that close to him. I thought there was an interesting point in your article where Greg Jennings says, hey, you know, Aaron was kind of by himself. I'd have him over to the house for Thanksgiving. I mean, these are people that he has had incredibly close personal relationships with and just cut off. He almost seems like he's creating these wild emotional walls, which are in many ways perhaps hindering him on the field too.
Yeah, he can go right down the list, right? From the Christmas presents to not going to his grandfather's funeral, the same one that, you know, he talked at length about calling before every game, firing a business manager he's known since high school, set to be the groomsman in a wedding, one of his closest friends, get the text him the day before that he can't go. I mean, there's a ton there. I mean, his dad, you know, basically having to get tickets on StubHub to watch him at Lambeau Field. It's odd, you know, and there's always, you know, maybe there's stuff we don't know that only Aaron Rodgers knows, but the sense I get that this is somebody who seeks to maybe eliminate anything he perceives to be negative in his life, and that at some point included the people who were closest to him, and mentally he just made that move, you know, in 2014, and he hasn't looked back. You don't hear about that often, let alone with anybody, let alone a star. I don't know exactly, you know, what the foundation of his life is, where he's at truly mentally with this all. Only he does, but it does make you wonder if that could be affecting stuff. I think that some of these people who maybe have been cut off, they are concerned, they are worried that it could be affecting what you see on the field. But, only he can answer for that, and he's chosen not to talk about it.
We're talking to Tyler Dunn, incredible piece, Bleacher Report. You can go read it. I tweeted it out. You can follow him on Twitter at T-Y-D-U-N-N-E. Appreciate him waking up early with us here to talk about his big story. How many people did you talk to for this story?
That's a good question. Probably, I think I wrote dozens. Probably 45 to 50.
Were you? And I think that's always interesting to find out how many people are talked to. Were you surprised that some of these guys were willing to go on the record? Because I think you, I'm sure, have experienced that having covered teams, anybody who has, there's lots of times you can have a private conversation and hear stories, and then you're like, oh, man, can I use that? And they're like, no, I'm not touching that, right? Like, I don't want my name attributed to this. To me, what was kind of staggering was the names, and a lot of those guys are retired and whatnot, but to be able to get them to go on the record for this story, did it surprise you that there were guys willing to go on the record in some way? Because I'm sure you'd heard a lot of snippets of this over the years, but this is a big boom piece out there where guys are putting their names on it.
Right, which was great. And you know what? I really can't thank, you know, everybody enough for providing information, whether, you know, they had their name to it or not. I mean, to try to let folks know what was going on internally. It helps. I mean, I think there's we all kind of knew that the relationship was a fractured, and we saw Aaron Rodgers kind of sniping at Mike McCarthy, and we see the offense that McCarthy had, you know, just going bland and stale and not working. And but the detail behind it has been tough to come by. So extremely, I mean, appreciate everything. To answer your question, I guess it didn't surprise me. I think some of this started with relationships that I had when I was on the beat. Got to know Greg Jennings, JerMichael Finley, Ryan Grant, you know, and a lot of the players then that didn't want the name attached. But I just think it starts with a phone call. You catch up, you explain what you're doing, and guys can make the decision whether they want to, you know, talk about it or not. I think that a lot of them just kind of wanted that information out there, wanted to let people know. And there's a few that didn't speak at the time that I got text from the other day, and they're kind of like, yep, it looks like the bubble in Green Bay was penetrated, was burst. I think that the world in Green Bay, it's just different there. Football's a religion. Things stay in-house, by and large. There's a lot of belief in the system, whether it's Ted Thompson, Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers. They were winning a lot. But that's the question, right? It's like you make the playoffs 8 years in a row, you win one Super Bowl. This could have been a dynasty. It was so close. They came close again and again and again in the playoffs, and that's the shame of it all. So I think that's maybe why guys spoke to, looking back on it, out of that bubble, you know, the best stuff definitely came from players who aren't in that bubble anymore. They kind of are able to see the real world and look back with some frustration that they want to get off their chest.
We're talking to Tyler Dunn. Go follow him on Twitter, at T-Y-D-U-N-N-E. You can go read his story. I tweeted it out if you're following me, at Clay Travis. A couple of more details I want to get to. On the field, literal almost insubordination. I don't even think it's almost. It was insubordination from Aaron Rodgers. But not only him changing the plays, I think you said up to a third of the time he would just change the plays, and some of the plays he would just almost draw up in the huddle, like, hey, go get open, including that incredible throw that he made to Jared Cook, which a lot of people remember in the Cowboys playoff game. But when you are diving into this and you hear, hey, Aaron Rodgers is telling the rookie wide receivers, run the routes I'm telling you to run, not the routes that you're being coached to run. I mean, it's not just that Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy's dysfunction made it uncomfortable for the two of them. It's that it put many of the offensive playmakers in an untenable situation.
100%. I mean, you can almost feel that frustration of what in the hell am I supposed to do with some of these young receivers, from Valdes-Scantling to St. Brown, Jamon Moore, who really didn't see the field much. They didn't know who to listen to. And when the play design is calling for one thing and Aaron Rodgers is telling them to change up a route on the fly. And also, you know, it should be worth noting that it's not like they had the thousands and thousands of reps that a Jordy Nelson had with Aaron Rodgers, where, you know, they can see the same thing out there, adjust on the fly. So I think some of Rodgers' frustration maybe came from that. I mean, he wanted Jordy Nelson to stick around at least one more year. You know, he wasn't happy that he was maybe surrounded by so much youth, because you're kind of starting over, but that's part of the problem. You almost have to embrace that change, embrace that development, and it doesn't really sound like he embraced that learning process with these young guys. It was always like they've got to prove it to him, which they do. You know, they've got to earn his trust. Well, it's a two-way street. I mean, these guys are young. If a play calls for a route, you know, just run the play and see how it develops. And, there's somebody who I talked to in direct conversation with Valdes-Scantling and St. Brown, and really I thought this source kind of captured that frustration and to a point with Valdes-Scantling where he felt frozen out and he just didn't see the ball a ton for a stretch because he was running what the play called for. That's definitely dysfunction to a T.
Another detail is that Mike McCarthy was allegedly getting massages while they were getting the final talking through of the game plan. He wasn't physically present there. What can you tell me about that?
Right. So heard that from multiple players, from a coach, you know, multiple sources confirmed that. And I think it was, you know, the big picture of it all, he took on this CEO-like approach and wanted to give his assistants more opportunities because he wasn't really letting them, you know, interview for a lot of jobs if they're under contract, so they could kind of run these meetings. And there were some players who said, you know, it wasn't a big deal. Like, whatever. There were offensive meetings, not team meetings. And, you know, to some, they didn't really care. But to others, Aaron Rodgers included, it did matter because, as I was told, one of the players was talking to a massage therapist. They had the same one, and she kind of let it slip once how McCarthy would, you know, get her up a back stairway and get a massage in his office. Now, how often did that happen? I don't even know if these players know how frequent. Some that talked to made it seem like it was pretty frequent. Either way, the optics are bad. And when Mike McCarthy yesterday, I mean, I don't know what you're going to say to your coach, like, oh, yeah, I did that, denied it. 10 minutes later, I mean, a player's texting me and saying, well, I don't know why he's doing that. It was pretty widely known. So, by and large, yeah, bad optics. It ticked Aaron Rodgers off, and that's where maybe you can kind of understand where Aaron Rodgers is coming from to a degree where, you know, the coach is calling in wrong plays at times. You're bailing him out. He's taking credit, anointing himself as quarterback guru internally to guys, and he's not going to offensive meetings, and he's not going for this. I mean, yeah, I'm going to change a play. Yeah, I'm going to operate on the fly. It was bad all around, Clay.
We're talking to Tyler Dunn, Bleacher Report. That's where you can go read his article. Last question for you. Ultimately, it seems like this dysfunction stems from Aaron Rodgers not respecting the football intelligence of Mike McCarthy and believing that he, Aaron Rodgers, knows better than Mike McCarthy. And I started this by asking if Matt LaFleur would be a solution or whether that would continue. Do you think that ultimately is where this all started, that Aaron Rodgers just didn't respect the knowledge that Mike McCarthy had?
Yes. Yes, I think it started with, as players and people around the quarterback put, he seemed to loathe, to strongly dislike, to be angry at a coach who became his coach, the same one who decided Alex Smith was better, and that only festered and festered from there to the point of the Super Bowl, to 15-1, when in his mind he's bailing this coach out, to he goes down with injuries two separate years. The team basically quits without Aaron Rodgers, so Mike McCarthy doesn't like that. Doesn't make him look very good as a coach if Aaron Rodgers carrying the team on his back. That NFC Championship game in Seattle, they're so passive. They're running three times late in the game when thrown for a first down, gets into the Super Bowl. That ticked him off. It added up over time, year after year after year after year. But you're right, it started very early. The seeds were planted. Yeah, I think that they were adults and they tried to work through it, but it was always there. And holding grudges is what makes Aaron Rodgers great. Yet in this case, it kind of ensured that this arranged marriage just wasn't going to work out at some point. And it should have ended a lot sooner than it did.
Outstanding stuff. Go read the article at Breach Report. I appreciate you waking up early with us. It's Tyler Dunn at Ty Dunn on Twitter. Appreciate it, my man.
Yeah, you got it, Clay. Thanks so much for having me.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Man, that if you haven't read that Aaron Rodgers Bleacher Report Mike McCarthy story that we were just talking about with Tyler Dunn, it is a phenomenal read. It's a long read. If you're going to be at work today and you're looking for a way to pretend like you're working and you want to read something long because you're missing the NFL and you desperately want something to grab onto there, it's really, really an outstanding read. I think I might be the only person who reads on this show. Did anybody else on the show read this story as well?
Hey, we resemble that remark.
Yeah, Danny G, did you read it?
I read an article about it.
Yeah.
Different one from a different website.
When you read an article about the article, it's not reading the article. They're aggregating his 10,000-word piece and turning it into like a 600-word piece, which is not very similar.
You still have an understanding about the story.
No, you don't.
Oh, my goodness.
You don't. Roberto, did you read it?
No.
Dub, did you read it?
What do you think?
Yeah. No. Eddie, did you read it?
I was like Danny. I did not read this.
You guys are like my dad. I read articles, not books. I was like, Dad, what's the last book you read? Well, I read a lot of magazines. No, you don't. You don't even read that many magazines. The number of men who don't read in America is at an epidemic proportion. There's like 99% of one of the reasons people say, like, why don't you write as much as you used to write? And the reason is because, well, first of all, we've got a huge radio show. I've got a TV show, and I do the Periscope and the Facebook. And because so many people in America are too dumb to read that you reach more people by talking than you do by writing.
I actually have to transcribe your words every morning. How would you like that?
You're a lucky man. Somebody had, since Shakespeare had a stenographer, I'm not sure that any man in America has ever been better. They had a better job than you.
So first we hear Clay for 3 hours, and then I transcribe his promo highlights from that morning and then put them on Twitter and on foxsportsradio.com, and then I reread like three times to make sure there's no mistakes on the transcription. That should count as reading a novel each day.
No, lucky you.
All right, Eddie, you got to give us an update.
You got it. We'll give you the Geico scoreboard from the NBA, where the Bucks beat the 76ers 128-122. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 45 points from Milwaukee. They're a league best 59-20, and they have clinched the number one seed at home court advantage throughout the playoffs. Warriors beat the Lakers 108-90. Golden State now leads Denver by two games with the best record in the West and the number one seed in the Western Conference. NHL, we had three teams clinching playoff spots. Penguins, Hurricanes, and Avalanche are all in. Pittsburgh with a 4-1 win over Detroit. Carolina with a 3-1 win over New Jersey. And Colorado with a 3-2 overtime win over Winnipeg. Speaking of the NHL, the Chicago Blackhawks host the Dallas Stars at 8:30 Eastern. It's our Discover Card Key matchup. Discover alerts you if they find your social security number on thousands of risky websites. It's free for card members. Just sign up online at discover.com/free alerts. Limitations apply. We'll be back to Outkick the Coverage in 10 seconds, but first, a word from Farmers.
At Farmers Insurance, we know a roof can withstand a lot. One exception being an airborne car. Seen it, covered it. Talk to Farmers.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Now back to Clay Travis in the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios.
Does anyone else think that Eddie is showing off the way he pronounces Giannis's name?
No. How am I supposed to say it?
Well, I think you're showing off. Say his name.
Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, that's way too much.
Nah, that's good.
Nah, that's way too much.
That's showing off.
Give me an example of how I should say it.
You should say Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's close enough. You don't need to show off.
Oh, that's
Giannis
a drop.
Antetokounmpo. That's the way I'm going to say his name for the rest of his career.
That's a drop.
You
can just call him Giannis if you want. But
I do call him Giannis.
That's wrong.
If you are saying every little pronunciation, you are showing it off. So you just say you. I think everybody out there. We just need to all agree. It's like, you decide that you're going to pronounce a name a certain way. Like, I'm going to say Gonzaga. I'm not sure that that's right, but at some point in time, I'm not going to adjust it, right? The same way that, like, people are saying, hey, you're not supposed to pronounce GIF, you know, the thing that people share on the internet, GIF. You're supposed to pronounce it HIF or whatever the hell. I pronounce it GIF. And I think we all just need to agree that Eddie – and people like Eddie who are trying to show off with other pronunciation of names, it's Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's the way we're going to pronounce his name in America.
That's not even close to how it's spelled.
That's what I don't care. That's the way it should be pronounced.
Do you say Tua Tagovailoa?
Mama.
I say Tua.
Yeah. Okay.
I say Tua Tagovailoa.
This is exactly like...
How's that? That's not much difference. A couple other vowels.
Eddie, this is exactly how Clay has been stubborn about Gonzaga. They're the Zags, not the Zogs. So every time you say Gonzaga... it doesn't make sense. They're not the Zogs.
It's the way that they should. If people pronounce their school or their name incorrectly, it's not my fault. I'm going to pronounce it the way they should be pronouncing it.
Oh, man.
And you are just, I think, showing off. I think it's a little bit excessive. That's all I'm going to say.
You should applaud the fact that the dude giving the reports during your show can say it the right way.
No, I disagree. I wish he should be reading those Bleacher Report articles instead of trying to brag like you did about how you read an article about the article, which is so pathetic.
The article about the article was still long, so I can only imagine how long the actual article is.
Yeah, it's a long article.
Well, most of us
life is complicated.
Most of us read shorter sports articles nowadays. It's just a fact of life.
So you don't actually know what you're talking about. Need an expert like me.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.